So we're here on the first day of the Fringe, and I'm with...
Jolie Beef.
Yeah, and Jolie, I want to just ask you something, because we're sitting here at the Warren, and I'm actually looking at a building that when I moved to Brighton in 1984 was a squat.
Oh.
And actually, squatting was really happening then. It's not happening as much, is it, in Brighton now?
Well, it's illegal now, isn't it?
So yeah, they but it was kind of illegal-ish then.
Yeah, so there was a difference, because if you were in a residential property and it didn't, there was no sign of you breaking in, then it was legal, so you were allowed to stay there. I think it feels like nowadays people have just got so scared of doing anything. Like, it just seems like no one steps out of line. I'm amazed that, like, only recently we found out that our Prime Minister stole from us, and then the Tories just did better than ever in the elections. It's like, in Iceland they overthrew their Prime Minister, and in here we just, like, give them a round of applause and more seats. It's insane.
So tell us about HIP.
So HIP's a show about a woman called Anne Clark, who lived in Brighton from the 60s to 1998 when she died. She worked, so she was part of the original Infinity Foods Collective. Before that, she worked at Unicorn Bookshop. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, I was there.
Oh, really? So, yeah, so she worked at the Unicorn Bookshop until it closed down. So she worked with Bill Butler and was part of that whole scene. And she was an extremely intelligent lady, so she was grammar school educated. And one of her lifelong friends fell in love with her, because when he came in looking for something to do with Rocky for his son, she assumed that he meant the philosopher, and he found that very endearing. After that, she started working at Infinity Food. She was there for about 5 or 6 years. And then when she stopped working there, she set up Avalon Bookshop, which was with Ken Johnson. Yeah, so she worked there with him, and they had a human skull on their desk, and it was an occult bookshop. So she was an extremely intelligent, very loud, vocal, interesting woman. And I squatted her house in 2002. She'd been dead for 4 years, and all her stuff was still in there. It had just been, the door had been locked, and everything was left in there. So her clothes, her hip bone, which is why it's called HIP, and diaries and letters were all in this house. And I opened it up, and there's like posters for the Zap Club. There's all these amazing things. And it was a really wonderful experience. And I really love history, so it was a really magical thing to find all this stuff.
So just go to that moment of discovery.
Oh.
And then the bridge from that to a performance piece.
Yes, well, so the discovery is in the performance. So the audience actually comes with me into the building as if it's the first day, and we see all of these amazing things. The weird thing is all of the serendipity between me and Anne. So I say how it feels like we're from the same tribe. The coincidences are crazy, like, and it keeps happening. So even in the last week, my husband's just moved his new laptop fixing business into Avalon Books, the bookshop where she ran. We only found that out this week, so he'd already moved in, and then we found out that that's where her bookshop was based. I just keep going around Brighton and meeting people that are of her generation and that are part of the whole counterculture Brighton, and it's like I've peeled a layer back on the old Brighton. And so, like, the moment that we got into the squat was just my dream come true, because I absolutely love history and I love immersing myself in history. I've spent 26 years living as a Tudor reenactor, and so I've always, like, imagined that I am back in time, and I really love that feeling. So to walk into a space with all these amazing counterculture relics and then this person's life, and I've kept a diary since I was 8. And so the thought of this whole bag of books and of diaries and letters being thrown away was heartbreaking. So I was like, no, I'm taking them with me. And it's been 13 years. I've been carrying all this stuff around for, well, like 14 years. And I was just like, actually, it's time to make a show about this. Like, what else am I going to do with it? So.
And how has her stuff changed you?
Well, because she became a heavy drinker, there's a real, like, okay, so I live in Brighton, I'm married, but we've decided not to have children. At what point do you decide that you maybe should stop drinking so much? So it's been a real interesting journey of, like, what is that flip? There's a point, you know, there was a point in her life where her letters and diaries and her creativity stopped. And a lot of the people that knew her during that time stopped being in touch with her. And so then there was this second part to her life. She actually didn't end up being lonely, but the people that she associated with were also heavy drinkers. It wasn't a tragic story, but it's about, like, life choices and what that means. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy of, like, what matters. You know, she's a bit of a Brighton legend, and everyone who knows her that I speak to speak of her fondly. But at the same time, like, what do you want from your own life? Like, do you want to achieve greatness, or do you just want to have a nice life? I mean, she seemed to have fun. And there's a poem for her in a frame on the Heart and Hand pub, on the wall in the Heart and Hand pub. And it was written for her at her funeral. Her wake was at the Heart and Hand pub. And it must have been written in the about the latter part of her life, after she'd kind of become a heavy drinker. And it's such a beautiful poem that if someone wrote that about me in my 50s, I would be well chuffed. So, you know, as much as it was a sad story in some ways, it's also not the end of the world.
Do you think she'd be glad that you're doing this?
I think she'd love it, actually, yeah. So she used to support squatting. She squatted those castle-shaped buildings that are next to the churchyard opposite Churchill Square. There's these amazing kind of castle-shaped houses. And her partner, Eddie, like, helped crack them open as squats and then did all the building work in there. So she supported squatting. There used to be a cafe called the Open Cafe that was in the kind of Seven Dials area. And all of the drifters that, if they filled up, they had rooms above that the drifters would stay in. And if there was too many, then they'd stay at hers. So she was kind of the overfill flat for the Open Space Cafe. So I think she'd find it really funny. And she was an artist, you know, so I think she'd love the fact that she's part of a piece of artwork.
And a question I've asked a lot of different people over the years who have put on stage someone else's life. And you've got this stuff that you carry around with you. So at some point, I'm imagining it all laid out on the floor.
Yeah.
How do you decide from a precious life what's in and what's out?
I don't. The audience does. So I've got bags with all the things that Anne was. And it doesn't cover everything. But I say in the show, like, we can't do everything in an hour. So we have Anne. Anne was a lover. Anne was a hedonist. Anne was a daughter. Anne was a mother. And I say, like, okay, you get to choose, so every show will be different and you get to pick which facet we go deeper into. And I've got an overhead projector with acetate, so I've got an old record player with records, so there's a soundtrack that goes with it, and we have visuals to go with it. But you go through the letters and diaries and you get to smell them and feel them, which are very tactile, wonderful things.
Right. So this is, I mean, I would call it immersive, but you've chosen to make this very, very involving for the audience.
Yeah, I call it extra live. So I worked backstage in Biscuitland, Tourette's Hero, and with that show, because Jess's tics were so spontaneous and a lot of the people in the audience had Tourette's as well, we said that it gave it an extra live feeling. So it's not so much that it's interactive, that you're forced to be interactive, it's more a safe space where anyone is welcome and anything can happen, and that you're willing to respond to whatever happens. So this show is going to be different every night. I mean, I know that there's going to be people at some of the shows who squatted with me, for example, and who were there at the time. I also know there's going to be people there who knew Anne. So each show is definitely going to be different. There's going to be new revelations and there's going to be new elements each time. And I call that extra live. So it's a little bit different to audience interaction, where you might feel a bit forced to do something. This is more like, no, we're all here. We're in a room. We're going to talk. We're going to look at stuff. And it's not got that kind of level of social etiquette that you have with going to the theatre. We don't have to worry about that. This is more like a bunch of people in a room having an interesting time.
So are you you're obviously in an improvisational mode, but what just describe the texture of your soul when you're in that space.
I have to find ways to stop myself just being a roller coaster, because when the adrenaline kicks in, you can just launch into it and then that's that. So I have a few things that kind of like posts almost. So if you imagine a skier skiing down, like going around those flags, it's just having a few things like that.
So you anchor a bit.
Yeah, I need some anchors, because otherwise you're off and that's it. So I've got some anchors, and I wanted to capture the feeling of there being no time, because she feels like she's off my tribe, time becomes irrelevant. And I think also as a person, and it's something I share in common with her, like, we knew people and hung out with people who were different ages. So it's like we didn't acknowledge age and time in our own lifetimes anyway. So I wanted to kind of capture that in it. So I didn't want to be too set with things. It's very fluid. And if we end up in a very deep conversation about one particular area of her life and we don't have time to do more, that's fine. I think that would be better than kind of trying to stick to some rigorous structure. So,
final question. I mean, you've mentioned that you have a family, but I'm addressing this to you as an individual. At some point in the future, we all die. So there's a locked room.
Yeah.
You know, you've been moved out and the room is there, left locked for a little while, and then someone opens it.
Yeah.
What's in your room?
Well, I've just written a book, which is it's 9 years old, actually. So hopefully this book would be there. And that's it's almost like a distilled version of my diaries. So that would be there. And then probably lots of, like, squat party rave memorabilia. Lots of UV, a UV light, everything glowing a little bit, and then this book, which is a distilled version of all my diaries. But I've kept diaries since I was 8. There's a lot of material there, and even I wouldn't bother reading all of it. So I've kind of put it all into a little nutshell for people.
So Squatters Yet to be Born. There's another show out there in however many years' time, but only Boo, thanks
very
much.
I want to lock it up in an attic or something. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks very much.